The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Harris, Judge Bjorkman, Judge Bratfold, the Honorable Japal J. Harris presiding.
Good morning, everyone. Before we call the first case, I will note that we are here today for an oral argument calendar. We have four cases on today's calendar, three oral arguments, one non-oral argument. Counsel, before we get started, I just have a couple of announcements for you. This is being live streamed, and in addition, we do take a recording. I will ask that before each portion of your argument that you do state your name for the record. As you can see on the screen, there is a timer. While we do enjoy our conversations with you, these do go quite quickly. So please keep an eye on the timer as you do proceed with your argument. With that, Madam Clerk, if we can call the first case.
The first case is A241896, Rusty James Moore Petitioner Appellant versus Commissioner of Public Safety Respondent.
And the appellant, you can begin when you are ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Ms. Torgerud, this is Attorney Anthony Bussa, BUSSA. I represent Petitioner Rusty James Moore in this appeal. As the court is aware, based upon the notice of appeal and the briefs that were filed, the predominant issue before this court deals with whether or not the district court abused its discretion at the implied consent hearing to deny the rescission of the revocation of Mr. Moore's driver's license based on Mr. Moore's alleged failure to present sufficient evidence to manifest the prescription drug defense to this rescission under Minnesota Statute 169A.53, Subdivision 3I. This case to me is incredibly unique in that Mr. Moore was stopped by law enforcement for a traffic violation, and subsequent to that stop, based upon alleged observations made by the state trooper, Trooper Besser in this case, the trooper engaged in further DWI investigation, which would include field sobriety tests and ultimately obtaining a warrant to obtain an evidentiary sample from Mr. Moore. That evidentiary sample from Mr. Moore highlighted the presence and the only presence of amphetamine, of which Mr. Moore possessed a valid prescription for at the time of this incident. Mr. Moore was completely honest and open with the trooper during this entire observation, through this entire investigation about his use of amphetamines pursuant to his Adderall prescription, no other controlled substances. He provided the trooper with his prescription bottle that was a valid prescription for amphetamine. At the contested evidentiary hearing on this implied consent, Mr. Moore submitted his valid prescription at the time pursuant to his pharmacy of his prescription for Adderall. And Mr. Moore credibly testified that the only substance he it consumed was the Adderall, and he consumed it in accordance with its terms of the prescription. As the court is well aware, this statute and this prescription drug defense was recently interpreted by this court pursuant to Thordson versus Commissioner of Public Safety, 10 Northwest 2nd, or sorry, 10 Northwest 3D, 310 back in July of 2024, pursuant to a published decision. That case dealt with what a petitioner needs to present to a district court to manifest and marshal that prescription drug defense. And what's unique about that decision is that, and we understand that the review of a district court's decision is abuse of discretion, which gives the district court wide latitude to make decisions as a fact finder. However, what I find unique in that decision is that they specifically state that you do not, meaning a petitioner does not need to prove that the petitioner took that controlled substance of which is prescribed pursuant to the therapeutic levels. They just need to take it in accordance with the prescription. Here is even
But
more unique.
that's the question I have in this case. I mean, it's undisputed, as I understand the record, including the exhibit that lists the medications your
client has been prescribed, that his prescription is for one 30 milligram dose daily. So how do we explain the half a pill found in the container that it's a pill and a half. A half a pill isn't consistent with the recommended prescription dose, is it?
Sure. As Mr. Moore testified to, there's a half pill because his doctor explained that he only can has to take or he can take a half on the weekends when he doesn't work and he doesn't need a full pill. That's what he testified to. But what's more consistent with that is that if is that and my point being is that he doesn't need to take it in accordance with the therapeutic levels. However, here, if you compare with his, which is what is in the record, not only his prescription, which is 30 milligrams, you also then compare it to the BCA test results, and it's consistent with a 30 milligram ingestion. It wasn't as if he took 40 milligrams, he took 50 milligrams, or he took less. He took it pursuant to 30 milligrams. So the therapeutic level, albeit which is not, doesn't need to be proven, it's consistent with what he took pursuant to his medication. So
So,
that's
but
the
didn't.
counsel. Important. Go ahead.
Oh, all right, I'll go ahead. Mr. Bassa, thanks so much for your argument, and I can see that there is some, at least purported logic behind your argument about the BCA test result and therapeutic levels as supporting or being consistent with your argument. It seems to me that would require some expert testimony. The trooper in this case was even asked some questions about the test result and indicated that the trooper didn't have those qualifications to discuss. That's part of the, there was some discussion of that, even at least in the opinion on the Thordson case. And similarly, a physician's assistant said in that case, unable to opine on that. So that's all that opinion that you're asking us to draw from the BCA
Right.
test. It just seems to me to be something that could have come up in this case. There could have been evidence, perhaps, along those lines. We just don't have it in this record. So let's go back to just talking about Thordson a little bit. I don't disagree with your point about what's the burden of proof. Mr. Moore's burden of proof doesn't include proving the presence of the amphetamine within therapeutic levels. I think that is within the Thordson case. But I think what Judge Bjorkman was referring to is an earlier passage in the case where, that Thordson also involved an individual who said, yeah, I don't always take my Adderall prescription as described, may well have been as a result of a discussion with Thordson's doctor as well. But the point is the driver's admitting to not always following the prescription. And our court in that case said that that sort of evidence, all right, the failure to take a prescription according to the prescription, this evidence is sufficient on its own. I'm just reading from Thordson to support the conclusion that Thordson failed to meet her burden to prove, because this is going to the statutory language. The language says it's Mr. Moore's burden to prove the prescription drug affirmative defense because the evidence in Thordson's case did not show that she used the controlled substance according to the terms of the prescription. Isn't Mr. Moore in the same position as Ms. Thordson on that narrow point? He also did not use the Adderall in a, he acknowledged, I don't always use it according to the written prescription.
Yeah, thank you. I think that there is a line of distinction between this case and Thordson if you look at the specific facts of this case. It started out that Mr. Moore stated he took his one pill that morning, and that is all he took. He then provided the prescription bottle for his prescribed Adderall to the state trooper, which then provides a half pill left. He then, in response to that trooper's question, says on days, because she questions, why is there a half pill? In response to that specific question, he says there are days such as weekends, which this date was not a weekend, it was a Friday, as he was coming from work to go to his daughter's graduation in Brainerd, so approximately an hour and some change from where he was working in Alexandria, Minnesota, that on the
Well,
weekends.
I don't mean to. I'll let you go on. I'll just ask one more question because I just want this understand this part of the Thordson
Yes.
case, if you don't mind. So in Thordson, that driver also said that on the day of the top stop, she followed the prescription.
Yes.
Okay, so I mean, you see what I'm saying? There's like a parallel here. Mr. Moore
Yeah.
said he followed it on the day of the stop, but he acknowledged I don't always follow it, and our court said, well, look at the terms, the language of the prescription drug affirmative defense by statute. It says a driver's burden to prove that they use according to the prescription. And Mr. Moore admitted he didn't. I just want your take on whether that part of Thorsen is the same for Mr. Moore.
Sure. I believe that in comparing this case to Thordson, he admitted on this day that he took it in accordance with the prescription on this day. He then does state on other days he may not take it. So that goes to what's the credibility? But then going to one of your first questions about the necessity of potential expert testimony about the therapeutic levels. I do agree that depending on the situation, when you're talking about science and therapeutic levels, an expert could be necessary and oftentimes would be necessary to talk about therapeutic levels. However, in this case, I think that when you look at the prescription provided at 30 milligrams and then you compare it with the BCA results, which provides for 30 milligrams, within the plus or minus of the error rate as provided on the BCA results, you don't need an expert because it's the same number. So if you have the same number, which is then it's consistent with his testimony that he took it as prescribed that day.
Well, I'm no expert, absolutely not, which is why I would think you would need expert testimony.
Sure.
30 milligrams at what, 6 p.m. at night, if you took the medication in the morning, wouldn't there have been some absorption? I mean, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. This is why the
Right.
whole point. I'm just
Right.
guessing here.
Sure. So I understand neither am I or the absorption, but when someone says I took 30 and now it comes back from the BCA that it's 30, we have that sort of comparison. And that's kind of where the burden sits. And he was consistent with that the entire time with the trooper. He was consistent with that with his testimony because you sort of put in a position then as a defendant that may be of limited means that now we got to either find or hire an expert every single time to challenge a license revocation, of which all I did is take my prescription in accordance with what it says, which kind of creates a very, and I understand the petitioner's challenging it and they're saying, I did not do this. But as the court well knows, is that if there's any presence of any substance, whether prescribed or not, the commissioner must initially revoke a license, right? So then you, as the aggrieved, must then challenge. So now we take this position to say, well, you're looking at, these test results in comparison with the testimony, they look the same. And therefore, because they appear to be the same of reasonable bases, that does satisfy his burden that he took it in accordance with the prescription. Because the state also did not hire, or sorry, they also did not call a BCA expert to then challenge whether that assertion is real, whether how the metabolization works, what the exact test results were. And I understand it's not the commissioner's burden to prove that he then did not take that in accordance with his prescription. But if you're looking at this reasonably and you're presenting this all to the court, I don't see another possible outcome or a possible explanation because they match together with the prescription versus what the test results were.
Okay,
That
so
is where the rub therein
yeah,
lies.
I think I understand your argument on that point. I just want to ask one other thing because I see your time is running, and of course you have some rebuttal too. So if you'd rather talk about it, then this affirmative defense has two parts, right? It has the driver advocating, for it has to not only prove use according to a prescription under the language of the statute, but the driver, this is gives the district court an unless phrase, right? So unless, proving use according to a prescription is an affirmative defense unless the district court finds impaired ability to drive. This district court found against Mr. Moore on both of those steps of the statute. So we could agree with you on this first step that Mr. Moore was using according to a prescription and still affirm, right, on that second step, because our district court found, based on the evidence at the evidentiary hearing, that Mr. Moore's ability to drive was impaired. So help me
Correct.
out and understand your argument on, because I might just be missing something.
Yeah, so you're correct. Is that it is that one, you're absolutely correct that you have to establish and meet your burden, but then also you have to provide sufficient evidence that you are not sufficiently impaired through the use of your prescription, even if you took it in accordance with the prescription. Here, I believe that the district court got it wrong in light of the totality of the evidence, because Mr. Moore has a, not only did he take his prescription medication for Adderall, as stated by Mr. Moore in his testimony, he also has a variety of other physical ailments that he takes medication for, most notably his diabetes and the like, and even had special diabetes-based shoes, which he told the trooper, and they had a discussion about it, which makes walking difficult for him, even on a normal, ordinary type day. As such, he continued to explain this to the trooper and explain his physical ailments, but he did not have slurred speech, watery bloodshot eyes. He did not have like an inability to understand or comprehend, but he consistently explained that he has some of these physical ailments that will make the divided attention tests, such as the walking and turning and the one-legged stand, a little difficult because he can't stand naturally for a very long time because of those physical ailments, which were also, again, specifically proven due to his medication. And I see that my time is up, so I will address that in my redress.
Thank you, counsel. Respondent, you can begin when you are ready.
Good morning, Your Honors, Mr. Bessa. May it please the court. My name is Rihanna Torgerud, and I represent Commissioner of Public Safety. The question before this court today is whether the district court abused its discretion by finding, one, that appellant did not meet his burden to prove that he took his prescription as prescribed, and two, that a preponderance of the evidence demonstrated appellant's ability to drive was impaired by his use of a controlled substance. Either of these bases, as Judge Raffold pointed out, are independently sufficient to uphold the district court's order and the license revocation. The commissioner asks this court to affirm because the district court's conclusions are supported by its findings and the record, and they are not contrary to the law, and therefore there was no abuse of discretion in this case. Appellant's arguments to the contrary ask this court to reweigh the evidence presented and reconsider the district court's credibility determinations, which this court does not do on appeal.
Counsel, appellant contends in one of his briefs that the blood test results are the truth serum, that the amphetamine level is commensurate with that prescribed and undisputedly prescribed for Adderall. Why does that argument fail?
Well, I believe that that is an improper argument to this court. There was no evidence presented to the district court about what the therapeutic ranges are and what they could indicate. As either Judge Bjorkman or Judge Braffold pointed out, the trooper was asked about this and couldn't testify to it. And this court cannot consider mere assertions of appellant's counsel as evidence of that. The question before this court is whether the district court abused its discretion based on evidence that it was actually presented with, and it was not presented with evidence on what the therapeutic ranges are, what they mean.
But counsel, doesn't the prescription indicate that he's to take 30 milligrams? And then the test from the BCA indicates that there is 0.03. And again, it indicates the units are milligrams. So we can presume 34 milligrams of amphetamines in there in his system. So doesn't that seem to, it doesn't seem that that's an argument of counsel. It seems that there is evidence. His prescription says 30 milligrams, and he had 30 milligrams of his prescription or amphetamines in his system. Why isn't that sufficient? Going back to Judge Bjorkman's question.
I think that that is maybe asking the district court to speculate about, as
But
Judge
counsel,
Braffold pointed out. Sorry.
how is that speculation? Again, I'm trying to understand how that can be speculation when, again, the test specifically indicates it's 0.034 milligrams, again, the unit, and his prescription indicates 30 milligrams, again, the unit of use. So I'm trying to understand, one, how is that speculation if those are just, it seems like it's math, it's just mere numbers. You have 30 milligrams of use, you have 30 milligrams in the system. Isn't that just a mere 1 plus 1 equals 2?
So as Judge Raffold pointed out, there is metabolization of and absorption of prescription drugs, and I couldn't say how that affects how much a person actually took that day or anything like that, because I'm not an expert. I can't say what it exactly means. And I think the trooper couldn't say what the amount in his blood means either, as to whether or not he took his prescription as prescribed, whether he took only 30 milligrams that day. So I think that there needs to be some sort of evidence, testimony about what that number actually means in the context of the case and the facts.
Can I ask you this? It seemed the district court was particularly troubled by the presence of a half a pill in the container that Mr. Moore presented to the trooper. And granted, the exhibit that lists the prescription says a 30 milligram dose is the prescribed dose. But we do have testimony from Mr. Moore that his physician told him that a half a pill would be fine. Why isn't that evidence to sustain a burden that the fact that there's half a pill in the container doesn't mean that he is not following the prescription, the prescribed amount.
Yes, so the district court's resolution of this issue indicates that it did not find credible Mr. Moore's testimony on that point. It rejected that testimony by concluding that there wasn't evidence of a prescription that allows him to take half of a pill. And so, his testimony, the district court didn't have to believe it. The district court is in the best position to make credibility determinations and weigh the evidence that it's presented with. And it didn't find his testimony on that point credible compared to what his prescription list actually states on it. And the district court was in the position to do that. And like in Thordson, his admission to taking the medication, one half of a pill, which is contrary to what the written prescription said, is sufficient to find that he did not take his prescription as prescribed. And beyond that, in Thordson, the court dealt with this inconsistency between some days this person may not take their prescription as prescribed. They testified that they did on the day of, but there's evidence that they don't, and the district court couldn't reconcile with that. It appears in this case that the district court had the same issue based on the trooper's testimony, which it credited that the trooper suspected that appellant did not take his Adderall as prescribed, potentially by taking too much of it or snorting it, based on her training and experience, the presence of that half of a pill, appellant's admission to snorting meth in the past, and the level of impairment that she was seeing in petitioner at nearly 12 hours after he allegedly took his prescription at 6 a.m. is what he said, and it was nearly 5:30 p.m. in the day. And the district court's,
Counsel, if you
sorry.
don't mind, I'd like to just follow up briefly on this question of how the district court handled Mr. Moore's testimony that his doctor had told him that he could take a half a pill on the weekend because he was prescribed this medication primarily to maintain his driving alertness on these exercise occupation. So, I don't see credibility finding by the district court. I'm reading the written findings, page 8. I see the district court saying that there was no evidence of a prescription, which I read as meaning a written prescription for a half a pill. No such prescription has been entered into the record. And then I see that the district court repeats Trooper Bozer's testimony, which is that in her training and experience, she suspected that petitioner had crushed and snorted some amount of Adderall after work. Right, which of course he denied, Mr. Moore denied, both to the trooper at the time as well as during his testimony. So I guess if you might want to help me see your credibility argument there, I'm not seeing it as to what the doctor told Mr. Moore, which by the way, as was just argued by appellant's counsel, this is not a day where Mr. Moore said, yes, I took half a pill. This is a day where he said, no, I took my pill as prescribed at 6 a.m. So Yeah, I'm just trying to connect the dots in some of your argument, and I'm having a hard time.
Yeah, so the district court's resolution of this issue demonstrates implicit findings that the trooper's testimony, which supports the resolution, was more credible than appellant's testimony, which undermined the resolution or was contrary to the resolution of this issue. And I would point the court to a case not cited in my brief, Umflett v. Commissioner of Public Safety, 533 Northwest 2nd, 636, which this court has applied many times for this precise principle, in other cases about implicit findings of credibility. And
You're saying, let me just make sure I understand what you're saying, that the district court implicitly credited the trooper's testimony on what? What point? So help me out.
that petitioner that she suspected that petitioner did not take his prescription as prescribed on the day of. He told her that he took it at 6 a.m. as prescribed. And based on what she was seeing and her training and experience, she suspected that he did not take it as prescribed, and discredited or rejected appellant's testimony to the contrary. And like you pointed out, even in Thordson, the driver testified that, oh, on the day of it, the driving incident, I took my prescription as prescribed, but this court still found that the appellant did not meet their burden to prove that they took their prescription as prescribed, even though they
All right,
testified
so
to that.
you're shifting now, right, to be talking instead of about the half pill on some occasions, the weekend, which, by the way, this wasn't a weekend, right?
Yes,
So
yes.
yeah. So anyway, that you're saying, well, what we could affirm this first part of the district court's decision on is because the district court credited the trooper, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to, yeah.
Yes. And I think alternatively, the district court was relying on the written prescription that appellant provided. And in saying that there was no evidence that there was a prescription that he could take half of a pill, it rejected appellant's testimony about his doctor's instructions to him.
That's the part I don't see. So if you find that in the opinion, good for you. And if you want to tell me exactly where you find it, I mean, go ahead, but I don't want to take up your argument time
Yes,
with.
and I can move on to the second basis because even if the district court abused its discretion on this point, the district court still found that a preponderance of the evidence demonstrated that his ability to drive was impaired by his use of a controlled substance, in this case, Adderall. And this conclusion was also supported by the district court's findings and the record on the district court. Cited the trooper's testimony that appellant exhibited multiple physical signs of impairment consistent with CNS stimulant use, including elevated pulse, fidgeting, uncontrollable bodily movements, trouble balancing, poor coordination and muscle motor function, and difficulty understanding, remembering, and following directions during field sobriety testing.
Right.
And
And I don't, again, we have all read the record, so I just want to follow up on a particular point, if you don't mind. So the things that you're mentioning are definitely all, at least as I recall, in the record. Here's the argument I saw appellant making on the second prong is that the district court didn't have a basis in the record for finding impaired driving conduct. Is that what's required for that second half of the if the affirmative defense of use according to a prescription is rejected, does the district court have to find impaired driving conduct?
no, the statute does not specifically require a finding of impaired driving conduct. It requires the district court to find that a preponderance of the evidence shows that the person was, their ability to drive was impaired, but evidence supporting that conclusion is not limited or does not necessitate actual driving conduct. And beyond that, in this case, there was.
Do you mean to suggest there doesn't have to be a violation of a traffic law? I mean, you expect there to be some evidence of impairment of the actual driving, wouldn't you?
So, I'll answer that in two parts. First, not every case of DWI involves evidence that the person actually was driving in an impaired manner, right? Field sobriety tests sometimes indicate that a person's ability to drive is impaired. Sometimes people are stopped for their tabs or other reasons, and then it is discovered that they had been driving while impaired, or they're in control of a vehicle while their ability to drive is impaired. So there's not always going to be evidence that the person actually engaged in what we would consider impaired driving because they weren't stopped after that had been witnessed. And to your second point, whether or not impaired driving conduct means that a traffic violation has occurred, I think the overwhelming case law on this in other DWI context indicates that someone doesn't have to actually violate the law. Weaving within lane and jerking their car within the lane is not necessarily a traffic violation per se, but it is evidence that courts have routinely found to be evidence of impaired driving conduct, and indicating that someone's ability to drive is impaired by some sort of substance. And in this case, the district court did find that that was the case. So there were physical indicia of impairment, driving conduct, and the trooper's experience. And ultimately, that demonstrates, and it demonstrated that it was more likely than not that appellant was impaired, his ability to drive was impaired. So the district court's conclusion on this issue was also not an abuse of discretion. I see my time is up.
Thank you, counsel. We'll move on to rebuttal. Counsel, you can begin when you're ready.
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. So first, there's a couple things I want to touch on. First and foremost, with respect to Thordson, in that case, and I do want to point out specifically and why this case is so is different, is that there was no BCA confirmatory tests that were provided to the district court. Here we have that, which is consistent with what his medication was. Secondarily, there was a factual distinction between whether she and a credibility determination between the court on whether Thordson, the driver, the appellant, actually took her medication consistent with that medication on that specific day, or if she did not, as she has noted that she does not take it every single day. And she also had the use and the ingestion of marijuana in her system, which creates a combination of controlled substances. And that taken together, along with obviously the physician's assistant's testimony about therapeutic levels and the like, that those taken together were why the burden was not met. Here it's very different. He admitted from the very beginning, and he maintained it from the beginning and to the trooper, and he testified to the court that he took it that morning. He takes it every morning for work, which this day was a Friday, and that he was rushing, obviously, from work to Brainerd through Little Falls to get to his daughter's graduation in Brainerd, which he was late for, and invariably caused him to have more agitation in his person. Secondarily, looking at the trooper's initial observations of and her alleged statements purportedly of Mr. Moore in his agitated state, she believed at the very beginning, well, he's agitated. He admitted to me that he has used a controlled substance. I have it. She then, as a trooper does, questions further about other illicit drug use. And he said in the past, meaning in the late past, he had used methamphetamine. As such, that provides her with this subjective lens that, hey, something must be awry here. And I don't believe that he's actually using what he says he's using. So it manifests what's called, in my opinion, and what I believe was manifested through the testimony of what's called a confirmation bias, because she put Mr. Moore through a battery of field sobriety tests, all of which he passed almost all of them, but for the divided attention test, i.e., the balancing type test, because he explained to her, given his diabetes issues and neuropathy issues stemming from diabetes, which were consistent with his shoes that he was wearing, because they were special shoes, and consistent with the metformin and the Ozempic prescriptions that he was also taking, which are also listed on the medication sheet, that he has issues with balancing and walking. So he passes a variety of the tests, But he doesn't do well on the walking tests. And what ended up happening is that the trooper then believes, well, I just don't believe him. He must have been ingesting, so I'm going to get a warrant, which is probable cause. There's not a high burden or not a high bar. And we have the test results, which only are indicative of method or of amphetamine ingestion consistent with the therapeutic levels he was provided. So what happened with the district court, I believe that the district court did abuse its discretion because it didn't take into consideration the totality of the circumstances by
Counsel,
action.
let's say that I find this by your argument persuasive. How do you still explain the driving conduct? That being that there was an individual who contacted law enforcement, provided law enforcement their name, and then provided a description of the driving conduct. How do we explain that? And can the court rely on that in and of itself, absent all of this other information you've provided the court?
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. And that was going to be my third point. No, you cannot rely on that because, as a trooper testified, many people call in all the time about things that are not true. When the evidence before the court is that Mr. Moore was driving through the city of Little Falls and he was stopped by law enforcement related to that conduct, but the law enforcement officers and no one independently observed any sort of poor driving conduct on behalf of Mr. Moore. He stopped right away. He, in fact, pulled into an alleyway away from the main street so that he could have the interaction with law enforcement pursuant to their emergency lights. There was no independent evidence that, in fact, he was engaging in such driving conduct. But moreover, and I know my time is almost out, and one of the questions that one of the judges did provide, and I apologize, was that under the prescription drug statute, it says unless the court finds by preponderance of the evidence that the use of a controlled substance impaired the person's ability to operate a motor vehicle. Therefore, that specific language requires proof that one was in fact impaired. There's no other way to look at it, meaning the ability to operate a vehicle was impaired. We don't have it here. And that's why that the court abused its discretion, and therefore the decision should be overturned. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank both counsels for your arguments today and your briefing. That was well done. We are going to take the matter under advisement. We will issue an order within the statutory time frame. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.